be blue, 'cause I can't see you. Richie, I love you.
Hello, this is Richie Wexler. Welcome to the Vintage Annals Archive Visionary and Outsider podcast. We've just added the visionary part because I feel like it really just filled in some of the blanks that Outsider wasn't always catching in terms of the content of and the themes involved with the kind of people we talk to. This episode is with Ed Christian, who runs the Andy Sweet Photo Legacy Project, which is really keeping the work of Andy Sweet, photographer, alive. He passed away many, many years ago. I first learned about Andy's work through a documentary called The Last Resort, which I highly recommend. You can rent it in most places. It's on Netflix now, apparently. And it chronicles a project that Gary Monroe, another photographer, did with Andy. And there's two books of that chronicle this time frame. We'll talk more about Gary's when we have him on. And the book that chronicles Andy's work is Shadow in the Sun. It's been put back out again. It's been reissued, and I highly recommend it. It's around $40. I think the original is like really hard to find and expensive, but a great, great book. And I also recommend watching a documentary about these two guys' work. And they embarked on a 10-year documentary project documenting a community in Florida of an aging population, and it's really, really beautiful work. And both of the work. I really fell in love with Andy's work and really wanted to talk to someone. So I spoke with Ed Christian, who runs the Legacy Project, and we had a really good talk about Andy's legacy and his work. So again, check this out. Check out the website. I would recommend the documentary and the book, and enjoy. Thank you. Work for the art, it's a legacy project, correct?
Well, basically, no, I'm at this point. Basically, I started in the business when I came down here from New York.
Okay.
Wanted to get into the photography business as a dealer, but I just couldn't find a way. I met Bunny Yeager in 2010. And
okay.
That's why I was meant to be here. I became.
Tell us who Bunny Yeager is, just because our listeners might not know. I don't know. So.
Bunny was the pinup photographer who made Betty Page famous when she shot her for Playboy in 1954.
Oh, cool.
So I was her manager for 4 years. And then I got involved with Andy's archive. Bunny died in 2014. And I started with Andy's family around 2016.
Okay.
And then at that time, you know, there wasn't a lot going on there. You know, they didn't have a lot of active projects. There wasn't a lot of demand for the work. So we proceeded on a program just to get his work out there and get it known. Did some exhibitions. We did two books.
What do you enjoy about being around his work? Speaking of his work, supporting his work.
Well, the thing about Andy's work is, number one, no one has seen every image other than myself and my assistant who helped scan it all. And so I've gotten the privilege of looking at material that the negatives were lost years ago.
Right.
And most of them consisting just of the contact prints. So I've been able to go through all that, and the work, it's like, it just keeps giving. He died at 28, but the collection of work he left is just unbelievable.
I think I read around 600 images. Is it more than that? How many images altogether did he exist?
For South Beach, he shot about 8,000 images.
Oh, wow.
But the thing is, most of the negatives are gone.
Right.
With the technology we now have, we've been able to take a 2.25-inch contact and make a reasonably good 16-inch print from that.
When they found the boxes of the contact sheets and all the, and some of that stuff, how many images were represented in that file, in those boxes, I guess?
Well, the work prints that were discovered, those would have been images that Andy identified as important and he hand printed.
Right. So
we do have somewhere around 1,500 of those related to Miami Beach, but some are duplicates.
Okay.
So there was probably a total of, you know, in that range, 1,200 images, unique images in the form of a work print that we were then able to then correct and enlarge.
What about like stuff he would have shot as a kid or stuff from high school or from college, from his grad program? Does that stuff exist somewhere?
Yeah. So I just actually, I just produced a short film along with a guy named Juan Carlos Saldivar, who directed it. And basically it did that. We took all the work that wasn't in part of Miami Beach and we made it into a 12-minute film clip.
Oh, wow.
And we commissioned music. We had, the music is great. It's the Miami Beach Rumba by Irving Fields.
Okay.
From the 50s. This kind of unique blend in Miami at that time of Yiddish influence along with Latin.
Yeah.
Two things blending. Yeah. You know, with klezmer music. We've only showed this the film once at an event in Miami, and we're holding it back till we decide we may combine it with another film and you know, make it into something more. You know what you're gonna love in this short film is we had a clip of Andy doing a comedy routine, and it we ran it at the end of it during the credits, and you hear his voice.
I don't know if in terms of homosexuality, if that was something he was open about, if that's something that is discussed. No, we don't have to get into it.
No, it was something that was, I think it was part of what kind of led him to lead this, you know, to hang out with some pretty dangerous people.
Yeah.
Because so, you know, he had this kind of split personality and he was not in a good place.
I'm curious if you know anything about him as a kid. I mean, not many kids take a lot of photos and make their own dark room at 10.
Yeah.
You know anything about just like his curiosity, what he was like as a kid?
Just immediately, first time he got a camera, he was just fixated on it. And apparently we have the work he shot in the neighborhood, work he shot, you know, in a high school chemistry class, all of that stuff. And then the interesting thing is he bought a Hasselblad when he was in high school. It's just that we still have his camera.
Was he a big darkroom person? Did he like to?
Yeah, he was printing for Mary Ellen Mark.
So she was teaching him. I know that she was supportive of his. I didn't know that she
came down here to do a project, and Andy sort of opened doors for her to get into that. She wanted to do a piece on the upper class Jewish community.
Interesting.
In Miami Beach, and Andy knew how to open those doors, and he printed at the same time some work for her. And so they
I know he speaks a lot about Dean Arbus. Are there any other photographers that you know that really, you know, were either you see as
William Eggleston, William Eggleston, Bill Owens, and Gary Winogrand, and those are kind of the big ones, and Diane Arbus, obviously. We just did this show over in Paris. And much to my surprise, we got the cover of the Like Review, which is pretty major magazine, right? And it goes to a lot of museums. And at the end of that article, they said Andy was one of the greatest unknown photographers for the last 40 years. And now he's entering the circle of the greats and people that are really some of the best. People are acknowledging the work because they hadn't seen it in Europe. No one had seen any of this stuff.
There's something that I've noticed in terms of, like, you know, even having Dean Arbus be an influence him. I made a list of different photographers that I think were mentioned in a documentary, and most of them were Jewish. And I think there's something in Jewishness that comes out, the war, you know, who he was.
I think it played a lot. And to be honest, I was raised Catholic. Okay. But it's a very similar mentality. Yeah. You know, we're taught early on that you're going to help the lesser, right? And that's what people miss about Judaism, is that that's at the heart of Judaism.
Yeah, I didn't miss that, but, you know.
And that is the heart and soul of it.
When, you know, they talk about in documentary about he made people comfortable, one, because he seemed like he was their grandkids, but two, because he had a warmth.
Yeah.
And it seems like that's probably, you know, that's, when you can feel a photo.
Andy, every day, he'd smoke a joint before he went out and shooting. I mean, that was him, right? You know, he was just like a free spirit, very relaxed, having fun, and a jokester, you know? That's why you'll enjoy the little clip of his comedy. It's really fun.
Personally, having a camera has opened up my world because I don't, you know, I can talk to people if I want to. I don't have to. It's a comfort. I have a purpose in the community. Do you feel like he would have been that same way? Was he just a very social person, or did having his camera make him connect with those communities? You know what I mean? Would he have interacted with that community in the same way without his camera?
Probably not. You know, I mean, I know the same. I don't shoot a lot anymore, but I used to, and I know the camera was an easy way to approach people.
Right.
And so, yeah, I mean, I'm sure. Yeah, it was a 5-year project for him. It went on longer for Gary, but that's a big commitment.
Yeah. Besides photography, like, you know, I know Gary made a point of saying he didn't talk about photography, which is kind of odd, but makes sense in terms of how he worked. But what are the things was he into? I mean, was he into music? Do you know about like his personal life, like he pursued outside of photography?
Well, he was really into gemstones.
Oh, wow.
He lived in North Carolina, and he used to collect gemstones, and he'd actually cut and polish them.
Oh, cool.
We have a bunch of those here, and we were actually thinking about making some necklaces with some of the pieces.
That'd be really cool. You had said something about his earlier work, and there's a picture in a documentary from the 70s, I guess, of these like four kids in black and white on the street, which blew me away.
Yeah, that's in Tampa. He went to the University of Central Florida, Tampa, and it was on either Eskimo Avenue or Temple Terrace. And I was able to corroborate a lot of the details with his roommates.
How old would he have been taking that photo?
He was in college, so he would have been like 20. Yeah.
It seemed like he really understood a lot, you know. I don't know. I think some photographers just kind of get it. Like, it seemed like he was born understanding how to do this in a certain way.
Yeah. He has a whole project he did on this flea market.
Oh, wow.
And he wanted to do a book. But to me, that's probably the strongest project outside of Miami Beach. It's all black and white. It's really, really good. I was going to say, those are some of the only signed photographs. He never signed anything. But when he was in college, he did sign some things. So we have some of those early prints in early Miami Beach with a signature. Other than that, there's nothing signed.
Was he I only know the portraits. Did he do other kind of work? I mean, I would assume with the flea market, unless he's doing portraits, was he doing other?
He did bar mitzvahs and he did commercial work. You know,
I guess the question is, did he only focus on portraits of people, or did he kind of get more in his own work? Did he do like landscapes? Did he do any?
Oh, he mixed it up. It was he preferred people, but there's landscapes and architecture. I mean, he documented the architecture on Miami Beach. You know, he's got all of those buildings at that time, as well as the interiors of those buildings, which is pretty amazing.
I think the best photographers, especially if they have an understanding of like how to shoot, you know, houses and whatever it is. And when you put a person in front of a really good other photo and you combine them and you can have both those skills as someone knows how to shoot a, you know, a background or something on its own. And then a person in there, that to me is like the dream. What do you think in terms of who he was, like made him, you know, I don't know. There's a certain way I feel like as photographers, we kind of honor a lot of people we shoot and interact with. What do you think really made him decide to do that kind of a 10-year project? That's a lot of years, especially being young. Like, that's a big decision to make.
His family was so deeply rooted in the community. You know, they came over here. His family's related to the first Jew in Miami.
Oh, wow.
Isaac Cohen. And they were in the hotel business. They partnered with the Rose family and built the Royal Palm. His uncle was the manager at the Eden Rock at the Fontainebleau, a confidant of Meyer Lansky, who everybody was back then.
Yeah.
Anyway, so it's this amazing kind of Miami Beach story. And that was his whole family story. You know, his bar mitzvah was at the Eden Rock, you know.
Right. Oh, wow. So it's interesting. I kind of forgot for a second that he grew up there and then went back.
Yeah, no, he was deeply rooted in the community.
I want to hear more about like his humor, his character, you know, his jokery, being a joke, you know, kind of
he
like.
He loved, you know, fart jokes. He liked to gross you out. That's what, according
to... We try to kind of focus on stories, too. If there's any stories you want to kind of add in here, I'm happy to hear them, but it's up to you.
Yeah. Well, since it's all secondhand.
Is there a best... Is there a good best story of the fart jokes?
God, you have to watch the comedy sketch.
Okay.
It's all there. I mean,
it's about farts. It's just him talking.
No, it's just you get the zeitgeist perfectly. Okay.
There's something about certain photographers that it's not just like the work. It's like, I want to know the person behind the work.
We haven't talked a lot about the sexuality issue, but there is one part of this entire experience that most people wouldn't think about, but in my position I have to. So I'm looking at 8,000 images, and not all of which had been marked to be printed.
Right.
The feeling was that he never got that second pass most photographers get when they can take their time later in their career,
right,
look at the early work and say, oh, I missed this, you know. So I printed a couple things that weren't marked to print.
Okay.
But you have to be judicious, because if I look at the entire collection, you know, you can slant the way a person looks at
right them. Right.
Do that. So he was, you know, he was fascinated with beauty in all its forms.
Okay.
It wasn't the old people. It wasn't all old people.
Right.
There were young people here too. Lots of so it's just an interesting mix of images. And we just did an exhibition of just the images that we recovered from the contacts.
Yeah, I would love to see it. I mean, I've shot a lot. I've done a lot of photography work with drag queens. A lot of my favorite photographers have done that. I would love to see his photos of drag queens.
Man, they're great. And his mom used to go to the shows. And yeah, there's some that are, they're particularly poignant because, for instance, we did a show with at the Haitian Cultural Center here,
okay,
called Shared Spaces, and it was about the intersection of Blacks and Jews on my image. And it was Andy's photos, because Andy photographed everyone from the cook, you name it. No one was ignored. And it was interesting to see these images that really represented the first time the beach was integrated, because it was segregated. You had to leave the beach at 6 o'clock if you were Black up through the late 60s. So that had just changed. So now you have Blacks integrating. The only images I saw where Blacks were not working when they were at the beach were the drag shows.
Well, what's interesting about that also is that in the documentary, it talks about how until 1949, Jews weren't really welcome to a certain extent.
So, oh, yeah. No.
And I wonder if having that recent memory to a certain extent within a generation of how Jews are treated really made the Jews understand they needed to kind of protect.
Oh, yeah. My friend Marvin said it was the only place that he went, and they referred to him as Mr. Dunn. You know, they were very respectful. That didn't happen anywhere else.
How much of his work do you feel like was his own personal work for himself?
Not much. Very little. I mean, you know, when you compare it to the quantity of images that are available on other subjects, not a lot.
So most of the stuff he did were mostly for projects?
Yeah.
Okay. Was he the kind of person who always had a camera with him, or not so much?
Yeah, always. Yeah.
I'm just curious. I don't know. I mean, some
judicious in his choices, but he always had the camera.
So I guess, and I'm also curious if, in terms of like, say, you know, taking photos of drag queens and everybody, was that Arbus's influence on him to a certain extent?
Man, I think it's more his mother's influence. She liked going, his mom liked to have fun.
You know,
she smoked weed with him, and she was like, and her husband was a judge. So this was not your average Miami Beach family.
Were there any brothers or sisters that he had, or any other relatives that were important to his
family? Two sisters, Ellen and her sister Nancy, who's in Colorado.
Is there a reason she's not in the documentary, if I can ask that?
Who, Nancy?
I thought there's only, unless it's
Ellen, she just never got here to do the interview.
Okay, I'm just curious.
And she didn't work as closely with the collection.
Yeah. One of my favorite things in the documentary was him talk, you know, with Gary was talking about that he, when they were shooting photos at some, you know, like New Year's Eve, that he would say to Gary that he felt like he was dancing with him. And I feel like that shows his, like, how engaged he was and his kind of sensitivity.
By the way, those dance photos, that's also a really amazing project. Yeah, there's a bunch of those in the film. You know, I'm doing a show with Andy in Lithuania next year at the National Museum.
What's that based on?
Oh man, it's just like, it came through the American Embassy and they love the work so much. It'll be the biggest show. They're going to do 80 images, a catalog, a curator. I mean, it's a big deal.
Is it based on the Miami photos or is it based on?
No, it's based on Miami. And remember that in Lithuania, they killed almost all the Jews. There were no Jews left at the end of the war. So this is like a, you know, it's a great gesture. And it's also, I think, a kind of stand against anti-Semitism, which is rampant in Europe right now. We're going to do this show and we're going to show The Last Resort as well. And they want to even travel it. So it's going to be a great opportunity, you know.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah.
I want to switch over for a minute outside of that and kind of get, you know, kind of get into the books, but especially I want to talk about how the camp book came to be.
Yeah. Well, the camp book came about and he didn't, it was his master's show. That was his show.
Oh, wow.
And, interesting. Yeah. At the University of Colorado. And it was not your average subject matter. It was, you could never get that close to kids now.
Yeah.
Back then, there's no way.
Unless you're one of them.
Yeah, but in permission from everyone to use the images. No, it's a ticklish area.
Let me ask a question, was he a counselor and he worked there? Or he went in there to do the project?
He was he was a camper, then he was a counselor, and then he, the last thing he did there was the photography in 1977.
So is all that work mostly from when he was in school, or did that work?
All that work is from 1977.
So he was still work there when he took some of those photos.
I got to find out if he was a counselor that last year. I think he was just there to do the project the last year.
Interesting. Yeah. You know what it really was about that, again, what about that community and that project? What it was that attracted him to that kind of, and do you know, like, how much work he made, how long he did that project? Was he embedded in the same way he was embedded in Miami?
No, I think he was at the camp, you know, it was 1977. So it might've been, I have to check. It could have been the summer before he graduated. It would have had to be. He graduated spring of 77, I guess. Okay. So yeah, that would have been 76 that they were shot.
I guess I'm curious on how long he needed to go once a week. Did he just stay there for a month? Like, do you know how long he?
I'm sure he stayed there. I could find out, but I don't have that on the tip of my tongue.
That's okay.
But the thing is, again, you know, you look at this work and you know, it's photographs of kids in every possible situation at camp, and it's really beautiful, and it's also, you know, like I said, it's like I photographed children before, and I know you have to be like very like guarded in how you approach kids as a photographer. Yeah. So Andy seemed to be somewhat unfiltered. He just was shooting, you know, and some of them are like very, what's the word I'm looking for? Very impromptu and very revealing. And, you know, you be the judge.
Well, and also, I mean, you know, again, like when you're embedded in a community, especially one you went to camp in, there's a safety there as well with who he was. People must have known him. Kids must have known him in some way.
Yeah. No, there's no question. Yeah, he was able to get that close. You know, I compare it like, look, I photograph someone I've known for 15 years. It's very different than photographing someone I met today.
You know, he shot women as they looked. He wasn't trying to just only shoot people that were like fit and that kind of thing. There's an honesty and a frankness to his work.
He almost consciously avoided that, you know? Although,
right.
So this is a good example. If you look at the photos he did, there were a lot of photos of beautiful bathing beauties, male and female.
Right.
So he was obviously interested in both. You know, we could see.
He didn't try to leave out people that weren't, that were like not traditionally attractive.
Right. You know, the interesting thing is that he had some of the most attractive people, especially males. He had marked them to print. None of those prints were in the archive by the time I got to it. Somebody had moved a fairly sizable quantity and all on kind of the same theme. So I was, somebody sanitized it a bit. So I don't know how or when, and maybe it was one
of
those.
Have you ever dug into that at all?
No, but it's obvious, you know. I mean, after looking at all the contacts and Mark, seeing what was printed, you know, there were definitely some material that was that's not there. And that's, you know, it's not a secret. We've talked about it with the family. You know, them not knowing anything about that when he was alive, it makes it a little difficult. You know, first you got to deal with the murder, then you got to deal with the fact your brother had this kind of hidden life that you didn't know about. May have been the reason, you know, he was led down this path that he was led down. But, you know, obviously from the film, you can tell Gary knew he wasn't in a good place.
Right.
And, you know, he was just mixing with the wrong people, you know.
I had a question. I think the first part of the documentary says someone described him as a really good storyteller. What do you think about when you know looking at all those images, what makes him a good storyteller? What stories is he telling?
Well, I mean, he did pick up that narrative, and like I said, the one thing that it brought to me home to me was the sense of community among these people, and that's the story to me. That's the story. This unique village, you know, in Miami Beach at that time. And how they just brought all the traditions with them. And they could have been anywhere. They could have been in Ukraine. They could have been in Miami. Yeah. It wouldn't matter. They were going to be basically relating to each other in a similar way.
Do you think maybe also the fact that a lot of the people there seem, not all, but some seem to have come from the Holocaust. Do you think it was almost a gift to that community that why he did this project, to kind of take care of those people, to honor them, to be with them?
I think so. Yeah, because you're talking about probably half the population.
Yeah, Andy's work was more celebratory,
right?
I think, you know, Gary's work is, you know, probably as well, but a little solemn in certain things I've seen. And they said something about, like, it was interesting.
I mean, it's all in the choices, you know. Gary's chosen to show specific images, and his choices are probably different than things I would have picked, but. For sure, the theme in Andy's work seems to be a little bit more joyous.
Operatory joy. I'm curious about his use of color, because it seemed like, again, with the documentary, it's made of a big deal that he was like one of the first people to really shoot a lot of color. What do you think? And it's hard to tell, like, because of how all the stuff was transferred. I don't know enough about the work to know if it's extra saturated because of that's what he liked, or that was what he would have gotten if you had the negatives. Do you feel like the saturation was?
He printed it that way.
Okay, interesting. Yeah,
he printed it that way.
I think that's what really makes those images strong.
Yeah.
Although on occasion people's faces are slightly a little too saturated. But
I don't want to put all the info up about our sales prices and all that, but I do want to tell you that we started by creating these limited editions. We do them at the most five different sizes. So a total of, say, 40 prints for any one image. But we started, the demand has grown and grown and grown. And we now, the largest size is a 50 by 50.
Oh, wow.
We sold one of those for $6,000.
Wow, that's awesome.
Without a signature. Pretty good, right?
Yeah, I had a question. So at some point, Gary talks about him using a 35 millimeter, but all those images are square. I don't know enough about cameras, but wouldn't he have had a 120 camera if he was shooting square format?
Gary, you're talking about Gary's?
Gary said something about that with talking about, I don't know if he was referring to him directly as shooting 35 or just speaking about people who shoot 35, but he mentions him shooting 35 I assume he shot with a medium format 120 film because they're all.
Yeah, Andy shot almost no 35 millimeter after college.
Oh, maybe he was talking about that.
He did it on maybe a couple little things, you know, commercial projects, but no, he was shooting square format. Gary was, I think, was shooting 35, wasn't he?
Maybe he was just talking about conceptually. I'm not sure, but he mentioned it. It didn't make sense to me because I know enough to know square. Who were some of Andy's teachers that he really respected or that were influential to him, or that
He did do a show with William Eggleston at the Corcoran. They were in a group show together. He wasn't a teacher, but one of the people that
you can include mentors, and we don't need to be strict about teachers.
Well, but Arnold Newman sent a really moving letter to the parents because he was well aware of Andy's work. He was also from Miami.
What kind of stuff did Arnold Newman? I don't know who that is.
Oh, he did like portraiture, but he did, you know, some really famous people, and he's pretty good. He's from Miami. Anyway, and Isaac Singer also sent a really moving letter because Isaac wrote the foreword to the book the family first published of Andy. Okay.
Yeah.
Do you have that book, that first book?
This, I have the shadow one?
No, there's one they published in 1990. So that was the interesting thing is when they did that book, they pulled all the negatives that were in the book.
Okay.
Those are the only negatives that survive.
What was that book based on? Is that what work
it is? It was not the best curation because it missed some really important images. And it was curated basically by the family.
Most of the Miami stuff, or was it all over the place?
No, it's all Miami, but it's just not, it's not like Shtetl and the Sun. That book, you know, by the way, Shtetl and the Sun, it's now like $400 if you want to buy one.
So real quick, tell me about your background and all this, if you have a few minutes. You come from New York or from
Miami? No, I was born in Indiana, moved to DC, Wisconsin, lived in New York most of my life.
What's been your path as an artist and a photographer, if you don't mind sharing a little bit about that?
I didn't start shooting photography till I was like in my 30s.
Okay.
I became passionate about it. And then I wanted to get into the business somehow, and I moved to Florida, and there was no way I was going to become a photo dealer. You know, I just didn't have the connects.
Yeah.
And then I met Bunny in 2010, and that really put me on the map because I was able to get her back out on the scene, going places, doing the book, you know, really revived her career in a big way. The documentary that we started working on, I was driving her to the interview when she got sick and had to go to the hospital, and she never got out.
Oh, shit.
So that movie's just now coming out after 9 years. It's like three different directors. Anyway, it's going to be really good. But that collection put me on the map.
What kind of, you also do film? You're also a filmmaker?
No, I just made this one short a film about Andy.
Okay.
The founding member of the Miami Beach Cinematheque, so I'm a film lover.
Oh, wow.
And I have a knowledge of film, but I'm just at this weird intersection of film, photography, music. So I'm able to pull people in, you know, like I pulled in a couple people to do music for these two short films. The other thing I found, listen, I didn't tell you this. Okay. Besides the short film I produced, I said to everyone I could in the family, I said, didn't Andy ever shoot any film? Nah, he never shot film. So guess what I find? 12-minute Super 8 film.
Oh, nice.
Edited with splices. It is fucking brilliant. What's shot that? By Andy, and it's of Gary shooting all the old people on the beach.
Oh, that sounds amazing.
It is. It is. So that, again, that's only been screened one time.
Yeah.
Well, I'm excited. We may end up taking the two short films and making something a little longer to stream. But for now, I just want to, they'll just show in museums, you know, if we do an expo.
Who's supported his work, you know, post his death? Who are some people that really championed?
To be honest, the real key for us is that it's about, I'm with them 7 years. About 5 years ago, I went to this hotel, the Betsy Hotel. It's on Ocean Drive. And they have an art program, and they, especially with photography. And they basically given him a permanent exhibition and wow, tremendous platform to show the work. So a lot of the sales that we've made have been through them.
Nice.
And yeah, so it's been a really great, and their attitude is we don't expect to make money on the art, but we want to pay for it, be okay, able, you know, to break even so we can show important work. Yeah. So that's what they're doing. And
Like, so what are the goals of the archive now? What are the goals of the people that are supporting the work? What are you all trying to do with the work? What are the plans, if any, you know, where do you want to move forward with this, with
well, this work? The physical archive will ultimately be likely at a university.
Okay.
You know, that happened. We got everything digitized. That was the big, you know, the big project, to get everything digitally, so we have protection that we're not going to lose any images. And so we've reached a kind of tipping point in terms of Andy's, you know, some of the images are becoming like iconic, you know.
Yeah.
And people, you know, they react to it. So right now we're, you know, we want him to be more known in Europe. And so that's what we're working on. Just, I don't have, I don't know if I told you, we did a whole fashion line. This fashion designer called us and wanted to use his images on like blue jeans.
Oh, wow.
I thought it was like the dumbest idea I ever heard.
Oh, out there, but you know, whatever.
It sold out. The collaboration was like their most successful ever. So that shows you what I know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it's just like we've had all these kind of crazy opportunities. So yeah, there's not, you know, we even had someone inquire about, they thought Andy's story would make a good opera. So I'm working on a theatrical piece for Bunny Yeager, a friend of mine. Oh, nice. She's going to do a one-woman show as Bunny.
Thank you so much for this. I mean, this is it's really great talking to you. Yeah. Like, you know, really have a love for him and his work, and it's been, I really appreciate your time.
Absolutely. And yeah.
Is there anything else? Is there anything you want to, you know, put, before we're done talking, to just put out where people could find the work, or people could learn about the thing, or any projects that are coming up?
Yeah, they can just go to our Facebook or our Instagram. Or our website. So it's all Andy Sweet Photo Legacy.
Okay.
Yeah. Cool. And just buy work.
All right.
Thanks for checking out this episode. Again, we are going to be focused on an episode with Gary Monroe, who was the other photographer that presented this project and worked with Andy in a few weeks. So please check that out. If you don't follow our page, it's Vintage Annals Archive Instagram account. We've got 53,000 followers somehow. I have no idea how. We have our website, vintageannalsarchive.com. It has all kinds of resources and photo galleries and all kinds of stuff on there. And if you like this work, please support it. We have a Patreon. We're looking to go really in a nonprofit model at some point soon, because what we're really trying to do is share, really archive people's stories, share their legacies. There's different projects we have. There's a main project. We've got a Jewish project. We're always really trying to highlight people of color, any kind of, you know, communities, disabled folks, that, you know, just anybody who doesn't really always get welcome and fit in. And we really try our best to highlight these stories and people on the page and in the podcast. And any support you want to put in would be appreciated. And again, just sharing about the podcast is great, because we don't really have a lot of money to advertise. So anything you could share about it would be great. We have had amazing, I mean, I'm kind of shocked at the level of people I get to talk to and we've gotten to cover. It's been the biggest honor of my life, and, you know, enjoy. Thanks.
Thought in different ways.